That was about as uneventful as we thought it would be. USDA made very few changes to the balance sheets for corn, soybeans, and wheat, but they did tighten supplies of cotton again, and cotton did not like that move for some reason. The reaction from most traders after this report was, what's next?
Live from the report day that didn't disappoint by disappointing via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, Chip and I will dive into the minutiae of USDA's reports out just a few hours ago. And coming up, a quick update from Varsity Joe Vaklovic from Standard Grain. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
All right, Davis, thank you. Yeah. We're going to put this number out there right now. Okay. So if you would like to give us a call and talk about what was in the reports or what wasn't in the reports or anything else to do with the markets, give us a holler. It's 855-4-TALK-AG. That's 855-482-5524. You can also tweet at us, and when you do, include hashtag AgriTalk in the message. That way I will be sure to see it. We want to answer your questions today. We had an interesting conversation this morning with Ben Pratt from the Mosaic Company about some a countervailing duty decision that is coming from the ITC on Thursday. If you've got any questions about that, we can try to answer that and what it might mean for fertilizer prices going forward. We can talk about the supply and demand report. We can talk about anything that you guys want to talk about in these markets. Be glad to do it. 855-482-5524.
We could talk about turkeys and rhubarb too, if you'd like. I mean, if that's any indication as to how exciting this report was. I'm in for that.
You know, the thing is, we got a carryover estimate on cotton that was about in line with what the trade was thinking, and that market did not like it.
No.
Did not like it at all today.
Well, and sharp cut to the yield numbers again.
Yeah, yeah. And it's based on Jennings. It's based on the actual throughput of the crop. And you would think that with the cotton crop being measured the way that it is, that we'd be zeroed in on it, but instead we've got to wait until, I think it's the May report, until, well, maybe it's April. Maybe it's April that we'll get the final cotton crop estimate of the year, but we're still wondering exactly what the supply is going to be there, Davis. And that market, it's not dealing with the uncertainty of this or that or the demand or China in general. Not dealing with the uncertainty at all right now. But there was a lot of profit stake out of that market, too. We can't forget that.
Fair enough. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah, very good. All right, let's get to it. What do you got in the news?
Well, Chip, July soft red winter wheat futures opened lower but rallied ahead of the USDA supply and demand report and was able to hold on to those gains through the close. The low range open and high range close were within the boundaries of yesterday's trading range, pointing to more sideways price action. The new crop soft red winter wheat contract is traded on both sides of 6:45 each session this month.
Jeez.
USDA, I know it's the ninth. USDA left the U.S. wheat carryover at 836 million bushels and made no change to the supply or demand side of the balance sheet from last month. Global wheat carryover was cut 3 million metric tons from last month, but global carry is still expected to be up about 1 million tons from last year. July hard red winter wheat 4.5 cents higher at 6.32. July soft red jumped 7.5 cents to 6.48. September spring wheat 6.5 cents higher, 6.59¾. Chip, and if there are firecrackers, which I would, you know, firecrackers maybe is stretching it. If there were sparklers in this report, they may be actually found in the global numbers rather than the U.S. numbers.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to talk about those here in a little bit because it was an important move that we saw on the global wheat carryover estimate. We're at 301.19, which was down from 304.22 million metric ton last month. So down 3 million ton. That's That's not an insignificant move.
Well, USDA made no changes to the supply or demand side of the balance sheet on corn, and the lack of any changes led many market watchers to declare that USDA punted on this report, opting instead to await export developments and data from NASS coming at the end of the month before making any changes. May corn futures opened about steady and fell back to test support at yesterday's low. Prices did recover to post a high range close, but it was still well below the opening range. May corn futures have traded on both sides of 540 in each session this month, pointing to more, guess what, sideways price action ahead, everybody. Uh-huh. May corn futures a penny and a quarter lower, 545 and three quarters. July corn slipped 1 1/4 to 534 and three quarters. Dease corn closed at 484 and three quarters, up 3 1/4 cents today.
Yeah, that new crop market, we've been talking about it in soybeans quite a bit, and I've mentioned that the chart formation looks good in December corn, too. But boy, after today, that's a new contract high close for Dease corn today. We did not make a new contract high, but we did make a new contract high close. So that's moving the momentum onto the long side of the market.
Well, USDA made the slightest of changes to the demand side of the balance sheet for soybeans, but carryover was left unchanged at 120 million bushels. USDA did cut the Argentine bean crop estimate by 500,000 metric tons, but more than offset that cut with a 1 million ton increase to the Brazilian bean crop. Global bean stocks were increased slightly, but are still expected to be down sharply from year ago. May beans opened fractionally higher, slipped to test support just above 1420, then bounced to post a high range close above the opening range. May bean futures 6 1/4 cents higher today, 1440. July beans jumped 7 3/4 cents, 1426. Novi beans, 1262, up 7 3/4 cents at the close.
Yeah, and not to be outdone by December corn, November beans, basically the same thing. It wasn't a new contract high today, but it was a new contract high close. So, again, the momentum is solid on the upside in that new crop bean market. It's a bottom left to top right chart now, Davis. I'm not saying that that is a market that it's going to get just continue to go straight up, because that's not how beans trade. Sure. But I wonder what's going to cause the next pause in the uptrend now. Is it going to be some of the Brazilian, the Argentine crop estimates? I mean, good grief. This Brazilian bean crop estimate is a source of uncertainty that's going to be with us for a while longer now. And this is as of March 1, these estimates that we got from USDA and the World Ag Outlook Board. So they, as of March 1, they added 1 million to the Brazilian crop and took 500,000 off the Argentine. We're seeing enough evidence coming out of Mato Grosso now to suggest that that Brazilian bean crop might need to come back. Not a lot, but come back some. And then with the dry conditions in Argentina, that crop probably needs to continue to come to the downside too. So globally, our stocks are tightening up on soybeans a little bit. We've got more news to get to, and we'll have more details of the supply and demand report next.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
And welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you could join us today. Davis Michelson with me. We're going to be going over some of the details of the supply and demand report. Before we get any deeper in, though, we did get Joe Vaklevic, Standard Grain, on the line with us here. Joe, how you doing, buddy?
Good. I'm sorry I'm late today.
Yeah, no worries. No.
I wondered if you had to, I mean, were you in a bay somewhere just fishing away and were like, I can't get reception here. I got to paddle out to the middle of the lake first. That's what I'm envisioning happened. Is that what we've got going for a deal? You can tell us.
That That actually has happened before, and I've called you guys from a boat more times than I'd like to admit. It has happened, to be honest. Not today, though. I wish that was the case today, but no.
We support that kind of thing, just to let you know.
And Davis, there is no paddling on Joe Vaclavic's boat. That is the trolling motor that's going to take you by GPS guidance to the exact spot where he caught that Lunker Smalley that won him his club derby at Lake Cumberland over the weekend. Congratulations,
huge.
Man.
Huge.
It was the second toughest tournament in the history of our bass club that goes back to 1989. The water up at Lake Cumberland, which is in Kentucky, you know, it was high, it was cold, it was muddy because we've had all this nasty stuff, and the fish would just not cooperate. It was the toughest in terms of like weight to win the tournament. It was the toughest one, second toughest one we've ever had.
Well, I tell you what, that fish that you're holding up in that picture on Twitter probably went a long ways to winning it by himself, didn't he?
It was literally the only fish I had a way to win the tournament.
There you go. That's what I was, that, the way you were describing it, that's what I figured.
Yeah, it was incredibly tough, and I about had a heart attack when that fish bit because it had been so long without getting a bite. It was fun, though. It's always better than a day at work, I'll tell you that.
You bet, man. That's outstanding. Congrats. Win's a win, baby. I love that. Love it. All right. Did you get it? What do you think of the way that the markets traded today with those reports? Was there anything in the reports that really caught your attention?
Not really. I was looking at the world wheat balance sheet, and they keep increasing the feed number for China, which is to be expected, I think, given that their corn prices are so high. That was one thing that stuck out to me. I don't know why they made the adjustments that they made on the South American bean crops, like that upward revision for Brazil. It seems kind of premature, but maybe they think that we're trending higher, and then decline for Argentina. But the way that the market acted, I would say, so this report was like a ho-hum deal. I mean, no excitement. The market could have dumped on that. I mean, you've got a lot of length in the market. Big funds are really heavy long. The fact that we sold off and bounced back on a nothing report, I'd say overall is a very encouraging action.
Yeah. Yeah. The high range closes that we saw in the grains today. Like you said, I'm a bit surprised that we got them. And it does suggest that at least we continue sideways here for a while. I don't know if it means that we're ready to take a next leg up in the old crop contracts, but at least steady trade there. The new crop contracts, Joe, new contract high closes in Dease Corn and Novi Beans again today. That's very impressive.
Yeah, I really think the markets are in the process of probably doing two things. They're discounting what they think is going to be a tighter situation, you know, all the way through the end of August 22, you know, into the new crop marketing year. And then that's kind of what USDA told us in that Ag Outlook Forum deal, which I know is all just, you know, projections based on a normal situation. But if that's the case and we really are that tight or even close to being that tight, you know, you can make the argument that new crop has to build some premium. And I think some of it could be weather premium being built in also ahead of the growing season, which is halfway normal for this time of year.
Yeah, very good. Did you see anything about why cotton reacted the way that it did?
I did not. I was busy. Yeah. I was actually talking to Clinton doing an interview right after the report came out. No, I didn't think I looked at the cotton balance sheets.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just kind of a ridiculous reaction there. But there was a lot of profits to take out of that market, too. All right, buddy. Thank you so much for jumping on with us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, good talking with you guys. Sorry it's late today. We'll catch you later.
No worries. That is Joe Vaclavic, Standard Grain. You know, Davis, on the back to the cotton. Well, let's get the cotton news out of the way here, okay?
I got a whole paragraph on that.
Oh, great.
USDA cut another 14 pounds per acre from the national average cotton yield, dropping production by 250,000 bales. Domestic use was cut 100,000 bales from last month, and unaccounted use was sliced 60,000 bales to drop carryover by 100,000 bales. But traders expected tighter stocks and raced from the long side of the market. May cotton was 4 cents lower, 84.32. December cotton also closed down the 4 cent daily trading limit. Yeah. 81.34. Dude.
Okay, let's talk about that a little bit, because if we go back, oh geez, I don't know what it was, 6-8 weeks ago, when we got that first close above 80 cents in the old crop contract, and then we got the close about a week later above 80 cents in the new crop contract, and I just basically said, listen, the way that this cotton market trades, you close above 80, you're going to get 90. But once you get 90, look out. And I don't know how many days we traded that old crop contract above 90 cents. But I know that we did. And then all of a sudden that profit taking comes back rolling in there. And it just got doggone tough to maintain the upside momentum. We had about a week and a half of trade above 90 cents, fell back through it, ran back up hard to retest it and see if there was buying interest above 90 in the May contract. And when they kind of failed to find it, fell back below 90, and the profit taking's been in place ever since. That May contract now, it's basically 81 cents. I hate saying it, but it's basically 81 cents before we run into any support in there, and we're just above 84 cents after a limit down day. Yeah. This is, it's kind of a tough situation in there. The export front, I just wonder if no change on the export estimate triggered some of the selling that we saw today, Davis. I think that market is looking for... It's looking for encouragement on a daily basis from the demand side, and that's got to come from the exports. And when USDA didn't make any change to the export estimate for cotton, we get the heavy profit taking in there. Okay?
Tell me if I'm crazy here.
Crazy, man.
This almost feels like strictly a paper trade, as if maybe the fundamentals don't matter. And I kind of go back to something that we were talking about, I don't know, 6 months ago, maybe 3 months ago, several months ago, about how, you know, people just aren't shopping. People aren't out at tourist spots buying t-shirts at Devil's Lake. Yeah. People aren't at Six Flags buying a t-shirt, you know. Oh, we better pick up a sweatshirt while we're here, you know. Dude, that's that demand picture.
If you ever get a t-shirt from Devil's Lake and don't get me one too, I'm going to be really upset.
It's a great spot. Great spot. Wisconsin.
The fundamentals mattered, because the fundamentals spurred the strong move to the upside and left that market at a price level that you could see some aggressive profit taking come in here. That I think is why the fundamentals really mattered.
But left cotton hanging out to dry, like so many t-shirts on the line.
Oh, fantastic.
You like that?
Fantastic. Let's get the livestock closes before the break.
Sure thing. April live cattle, 30 cents higher, 119.65. June cattle was up 50 cents, 119.65. March feeders up $1.80 to close at 137.15. April lean hogs $1.05 higher, 88.35, and June hogs up 85 cents of their own to close at 96.82 and a half. Chip.
Yeah, the balance sheet on pork had a steady pork export estimate in there, and the ending stocks for 2021 tightened up enough that I think it sent a message to that market that our pork exports, even at steady levels compared to last month, are strong enough that we're still going to be looking at a tightening supply situation for 2021 on our total pork supplies. It feels like we need to be on the watch for an increase in the export outlook for pork in upcoming supply and demand reports, based on what's going on with the African swine fever in China right now and total supplies over there. Okay, we're going to detail some of the very slight changes next. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers. First thing today, quality issues resulting from soggy Brazilian weather is increasingly a concern. We'll talk about that coming up here in the next segment. Cordonier says risk is to the downside for the Brazilian crops. He made no change to his Brazilian crop estimate of 132 million metric ton, but his bias is neutral to lower going forward. Heat and dryness are worrisome in Argentina. Again, we'll talk about that in the upcoming segment. President Joe Biden's $1.9 trillion stimulus package is poised to clear the House today or Wednesday. The OECD says the Biden stimulus will boost the global recovery from COVID. David Davis had that story this morning, and I said, boost? $1.9 trillion should drive a global recovery. Give ProFarmer a try at tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. The chickens have come home to roost. Find out whose fence they're perched on today on AgriTalk.
Welcome back. It is a beautiful, beautiful 64 degrees outside the broadcast bunker here in Northeast Iowa. Man, have you been outside at all?
I have. I did take a moment to get outside with the dog a little bit today. Over here in the bright sunshine out from beneath the canopy of the timber.
Yeah.
I make it 66 degrees and it actually says nice. It feels like 66.
Wow.
All now, that's I know. A lot more sixes than I'm usually more comfortable with, but I'll take it today.
I tell you, that is a warm, comfortable breeze blowing out of the south.
You betcha.
Yeah, love it. Love it. A little bit of rain coming our way, but that'll help get rid of the rest of the snow that I've still got. Have you still got snow?
Just a little bit on the north side of the house. Just a little bit in the shade. Yeah,
dude, I've still got a foot of snow out in the yard.
It's
crazy. I'll have it until April. I always have it until April.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous. Just absolutely ridiculous. All right. Before we continue the conversation, let's go ahead and recap how the market's closed.
Sure thing. Well, July HRW wheat, 4.5 cents higher, 632. July soft red jumped 7.5 cents today, 648. May corn futures were 1¢ lower at 545¾. December corn closed at 484¾, up 3¼ cents. May soybean futures 6¼ cents higher at 1440. November bean futures closed at 1262, up 7¾ cents. December cotton down the 4 cent daily trading limit, 81.34. Livestocks, April live cattle 30 cents higher, 119.65. March feeders jumped $1.80 to close at 137.15. And June hogs gained 85 cents to close at 96.82½. Planet Earth, we'd love to hear from you. Chip said it earlier on, but I haven't seen the phone ring. Let me just give out that number one more time. It's 8-5-5-4-8-2-5-5-2-4. Once again, that's 8-5-5-4-8-2-5-5-2-4.
It's 8-5-5-4-TALK-AG.
I feel like they're dialing.
Hashtag AgriTalk. We'll see those two on Twitter. All right. Wow. I can't even make my brain work after hearing
just trying
numbers.
To help. Just trying like to get that. The number out there, you know?
Okay. One interesting tidbit about this $1.9 trillion stimulus package that we are to pass. And Wiesmeyer made the comment earlier. $1.9 trillion is bigger than Canada's GDP.
Yes.
And here we are in a spending package.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely mind-blowing. You know,
well,
when we were dealing with a deficit, Davis, of like $18 trillion, something like that, I ran the math on it, and I figured out how we could pay it off. And the way that you paid off like an $18 trillion, and I don't remember if that was the number or not.
Yeah.
But the way that you paid off an $18 trillion debt was by paying off $1 per second for the next 585,000 years.
Whoa. That's 1,000 with a T.
Yeah.
Wow.
Every that second.
That doesn't seem feasible.
Really?
I would run out of dollars in like a minute and a half.
What do you think the deal is? What do you think the deal is now that here we are at 27, 28 trillion, whatever the deficit number is? It's hard to keep track anymore.
Yeah.
But it's that new monetary, modern monetary theory. You know, that's what we've got going. Just keep printing the dollars. As long as everybody trades in dollars, it'll be just fine.
Why don't we just write it off?
Well,
write it off.
That's what everybody does. Just write it off.
Just write it off. Yeah, and all of a sudden, everybody that owns our debt is going to be looking for some retribution on that. I would think that might create some tension around the world if we just did that. Well, so,
and maybe I'm old fashioned. Yeah, but it's right at the front end of the Biden administration. What if we need more money down the road? I mean, you know, what are the chances that we'll need more money? You got to keep your powder dry. You can't come right out of the chute like that.
Right.
Maybe save that for year two or even three.
Yeah, I think the, you know, in their defense, if you believe what they say, because you know they believe what they say.
Yeah.
If you don't act now, then there won't be any need to act because it will be what will be spiraling downward on the economy.
Yeah, I guess I can see that.
So that's why they're spending now. That's it right there.
Okay.
Okay. Let's talk about South America. The USDA on the Argentine bean crop put it at 47.5 million metric tons. That's down 500,000 tons from February. Brazilian, 134 million metric tons, up from 133. So down 0.5 in Argentina, up 1 in Brazil. Why? How? Joe mentioned it. What kind of movement are they, or what did they see that caused them to increase that Brazilian bean crop estimate? I said it at the start of the show. I think, anyway, this is what's going on. We had this estimate at 134 million metric tons from USDA is the result, or is as of March 1. So we were getting rains. Bean crop was benefiting from the rains 10 days ago. Is it benefiting from more rain 10 days later? Probably not. That's how quick it is changing in Mato Grosso in particular. We're seeing enough rain on a harvest-ready crop that, and I don't, you know, I understand how videos can be staged and how you get sucked into to stuff on social media, but evidently there's some guys that are seeding corn into standing beans because they just rotted in the pods.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, that would be serious.
Well, absolutely. And I think there's a little bit of that going on, and I know that there are some acres that have been abandoned. I know that. But in the big picture, were the rains that they got enough to offset? Did they provide enough good for a big enough portion of the crop to offset the losses that we're seeing confirmed right now? I don't know. I think that number's coming down. I like Michael Cordonier's number, 132 million ton. I think that number makes sense. Now,
because he's leaning the other way than USDA, right? Did I hear that right?
Yeah, he's leaning down.
Yep.
He's leaning down. Now, Argentina, if they saw enough evidence as of March 1 to take 500,000 off of that crop, and conditions have only gotten hotter and drier since over most of that bean crop, they're going to take more off it. I really believe that. They'll take more off it. I don't know if it's going to be a 46.5 or a 46 million metric ton bean crop out of Argentina, but I do think that they are going to pull that Argentine bean crop estimate down. that is probably why we are, it's not the only reason, it's one of the reasons. One of the reasons that we are seeing as much strength in the bean oil market as what we have seen of late. Argentina is not an exporter of raw soybeans. They are an exporter of the products, meal and oil. Therefore, if we run into any slowdown in their production, any slowdown in their crush, might tighten up those veg oil supplies a little bit. And who knows, Davis might send a little bit of demand our way.
Yeah, that would be all right. I theorized that last week that could be,
yeah,
it might be kind of a wide loop to get that demand here, but it's out there.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly is. Certainly is. Here's a big change. And one of the reasons that I want to point this one out is don't forget what they did to the global wheat ending stocks, 301.2 down from 304.2 last month. So down 3 million ton. They added 3 million ton to the Australian wheat crop and still pulled global stocks down that much.
Mm-hmm.
So demand, like Joe said, wheat feedings in China, one of the things that we really need to focus on. So good, solid wheat demand around the globe.
Evidently. And, you know, was that last year that we saw those giant fires in Australia? But
yeah,
we're talking about an increase month over month, correct?
Yeah.
In the Australian wheat crop? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wonder what they're thinking there.
Now, let's talk corn crop real quick before we get to the end of this segment here. Argentine corn crop, 47.5 million metric tons, unchanged from February. Brazilian corn crop, 109, unchanged from February. If they were going to make a change to a Brazilian crop, why didn't they make a bit of a downside adjustment to that Brazilian corn crop, Davis? I don't understand that.
It really doesn't make any sense to me either. There were a lot of talk about the late planting, a lot of talk about the struggles getting it done, and I guess.
Yeah, that's why. If we're going to be sticking this, what is it, like 60-65% of the bean of the Safrina corn crop is going in the ground after optimum planting time?
Right, at full bunny, I'm guessing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Nobody's wasting any time. Gosh, can you imagine how many corners are getting skipped down there right now? How many are getting cut? Holy smokes. They're doing everything that they can to get as much corn in the ground as quickly as they can and to cover as many acres as they possibly can. Yeah, the production has got to be under some pressure. We'll wrap it up next.
We've cleared the schedule for you. Give us a call at 855-482-5524 and join the conversation.
I think I might have painted myself into a corner with my thermostat, Chip.
Uh-oh. What'd you do?
Help me with this. So when it was like 18 below outside, I decided I was going to aggressively acclimatize myself in order to save on my heating bill.
Yeah.
So over the winter, I grew accustomed to just leaving the thermostat at 62.
Wow.
62, that was for me. And there was a space heater here in the broadcast laboratory, but I didn't need all that heat. Extra blankets and whatnot. Jammies.
Yeah, sure.
Now that it's getting warmer and it's going to be 90 degrees before too long,
right?
Do I now need to turn on the heater up to about 75? So that I'm equally as acclimatized rather than turning on my air conditioner when it gets hot.
I think what I would do is look at the calendar and pick a date on the calendar when you're willing to turn that air conditioner on instead of looking at the thermometer.
I'm no better at that than I am at leaving cookies in the cupboard.
You could be climatized by then and not even want to turn it on.
Oh, that's not bad. Like, let nature acclimatize me, like a caveman.
There you go. Like,
I like that.
You know, that's just Neanderthal thinking right there. That's smart.
It doesn't mean it's dumb. That's the thing.
That's right.
Global corn and beans. We have got to get to this. We missed it earlier in the show. Oh, Chip, your thoughts. Go, baby, go.
Okay. Beans, 83.74 million metric tons. That is up from 83.36 million metric tons in February, but is off sharply from last year, which was at 96.04 million metric tons. So basically, it's that half a million increase in South America that's leaning up on the global bean carryover. For corn, 287.67, up slightly from 286.53. The big thing here on both corn and soybeans is that the trade was, on average, anticipated that the global numbers would be down slightly. So I kind of had the trade leaning in the wrong direction when it comes to the global carryover stocks. And not big moves. It's just the simple fact that they went in the wrong direction.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
Well, make it real for us. Talk to us about prices. They talked about, you know, I didn't see much movement there either. If I'm looking.
Absolutely not. National average on-farm cash wheat price, $5, unchanged from February. Year ago, was $4.58. On corn, $4.30, unchanged from February, up from $3.56 last year. Get this, sorghum, $5. is the national average on-farm cash sorghum price projection. That compares to corn at $4.30.
Whoa.
Sorghum rocks. So
sorghum does rock.
So what I'm saying there is if we start to green up this winter wheat crop, and if it has any issues, and if guys are thinking, hey, this feed grain market looks better than wheat, are they going to plant corn or are they going to plant sorghum? And to the cash market, I think it matters. To the export market, I think it matters, because if we produce a bigger sorghum crop than what is anticipated right now, Davis, I think China's going to be around to take up some of that with some increased exports. So that could be a positive for us later.
Yeah, yeah.
So
it's
something that we need to watch very closely. Okay, then on soybeans, 11.15 is the national average on-farm cash price projection. That is unchanged from February, and is
that
up
feels
from
a little low.
57.
That feels a little low, to be honest. What are we at today?
Yeah, it does feel a little low, doesn't it?
And we're at 12.62 today in the NOV.
Right. Right. So it does feel a little low. We can't forget that it's weighted. But the thing is, I don't think that a whole lot of 21 crop beans have been marketed.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're sitting here with, say, 20% of the 21 bean crop marketed, that is maybe potentially pulling it down. Mm-hmm. But the new crop offerings that we've got in place out there right now are certainly pulling that average up, should be pulling that average up. And this is a cash. This is a cash right. projection, but basis is not a buck and a half negative anywhere right now.
You know, it's kind of funny you would mention that. I've been sort of letting the idea roll around in my head. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to ask you like a question, all right?
Okay.
Do high inputs seal the bin for corn sales? Do high input costs? Yes. We're heading into a high inputs season for this upcoming crop.
Okay.
Does that make the bin doors harder and harder to open up because profitability is more difficult to achieve? Is the farmer looking for, you know, higher numbers before he'll open the bin?
I think you're talking about a 22 crop issue because most of the inputs have been covered, haven't they? For the 21 crop?
I would think so by now. Geez, I hope so.
Yeah. Yeah. So that may be a 22 crop issue. And it may have some, it may influence our 21 crop marketings, but I don't know, man. If it sure feels like the decisions have mostly been made. There's going to be some flexing on acres, but I just don't anticipate a whole lot. National Weather Service 6-10 day outlook. This is for March 15th through the 19th. Below normal temperatures expected over most of the Corn Belt. You got to get out to the far eastern belt to get into the normal to above normal. We've got above normal precipitation expected over most of the corn growing areas. So cool and wet in the 6 to 10 day outlook there, Davis. That moisture seems to be making its way into the outlook more and more frequently now for the extended outlook. Okay, for Davis and for producer Big Apple Joe Stackler, thank you for listening today. Tomorrow morning, we've got a farmer forum with a focus on conservation. And tomorrow afternoon, Dan Bossi, Ag Resource Company, right here on AgriTalk.